Okay, thank you everyone for coming. Yasher Koach. This is really great to be back. Again, my name is Avram Kenner. I'm one of the staff therapists in the YU Counseling Center. For those of you who are not aware, we offer free short-term confidential counseling. We are located on the fifth floor of First Hall. You can also always email us on our confidential line at counseling@yu.edu. And we're here for you as an additional resource on campus. Today is part two. I think I see some faces from last time, so it's nice to see you back. This is part two of a sort of a new lecture series in an attempt to bring topics of mental health more into the mainstream of our yeshiva conversation as they relate to our emotional and spiritual well-being and our overall Avodas Hashem. Today is very Nani Diyoma, as we're days away from Zman Chirusenu, and we'll be speaking about the topic of addiction. I mentioned last time that the Rav Zatzal would often speak about the importance of sharing our inner experiences with one another and not being bashful or shy in this regard. And so it's particularly special, especially on a topic as sensitive as addiction, to have this space of shared vulnerability to facilitate a shared purpose of growth in Torah and Avoda. Rabbi Bashnak and myself are tremendously honored and grateful once again to bring back Rav Neuberger Shlita and Rabbi Blass to share some halachic and hashkafic considerations on this topic. I'm very grateful to Rabbi Bashnak for his help in making this event happen once more. We're also really grateful to Dr. Schwab and the Office of Student Life for co-sponsoring today's event. You may have seen there was a QR code with some anonymous questions, so hopefully, time permitting, we will have a chance for Rav Neuberger and Rabbi Blass to address some of those. And without further ado, I think we're going to start with Rabbi Blass.
Okay. Thank you, everyone. It's great to see all of you. Just want to thank, of course, our dear Javier. Please, when you sit, I want you to get to stand up.
Thank you.
I want to thank both Rabbi Kander and Rabbi Bashnak for their incredible contributions on the campus. Midos and their eretz and support and insight and everything that they do here, and hopefully everyone in this room, if you've not done so already, will have a chance to be exposed to a lot of the real godless both Rabbi Kenner and Bashnak and Bichlal, some of the personalities on campus that you know you might not interact with like on a day-to-day basis. Can I recording? Okay, perfect. Okay, I guess just as a beginning, just as a point of reflection about how different this topic is from the last topic. Obviously, it's different in name, you know, anxiety versus issues of addiction or compulsive behavior. But the whole way that these areas are experienced has a completely different template, completely different presentation, completely different energy around it. You know, anxiety is something that, as complicated as a topic as it is, you know, it exists in the area of, like, the mind, and it exists in the areas of thoughts, and what do I do when I'm feeling a certain panic, and how do I work through thoughts that conflict each other, and I'm not at peace with that. It's very much something that exists, sort of almost like in the upper regions of a person. It's not very connected to shame. It's something that a person would feel comfortable speaking with their friends about, with their parents about, with certainly with a Rebbe and a Mashgiach about, of how to make decisions. It doesn't go down to one's core identity of sense of self and feelings of inadequacy and feelings of inadequacy. Right? That's not sort of the world of anxiety. The world of anxiety is sort of the world of navigating through thoughts and through reactions. And when it comes to the issue of compulsive behavior, addictions, lack of freedom, you know, it's just the opposite. It sinks down into a core place of self, of what's wrong with me, and why can't I change, and how must HaKadosh Baruch Hu view me. And if my Rebbe or my parents or my friends knew the way that I struggle, then X, Y, and Z. it sinks down into a core place, a shame place, feelings of inadequacy, feelings of pain. And maybe, in a way, it makes it even more important to talk about them, because we realize that we're butting up against shame in a way. I mentioned a couple months ago to some of the chavra here in the room what the Gemara speaks about towards the end of Masechta Sukkah. The Gemara there speaks about the fact that kol gadol mechaveiro yitzro gadol himendo. Like, the greater a person is, the greater the yitzhar is. And there's a lot that a person can analyze as to what the Gemara means and why that is. Why does sort of godless greatness lead to a greater yitzhara? But the Gemara there describes, towards the end of Masechta Sukkah, a very fascinating Gemara that speaks about Abaye. Okay? And Abaye had heard a man turn to a woman, and the basic tamsis, basic idea of that Gemara is that, like, the man and woman, they made a plan to travel to a certain destination together, right? Might have been through the woods, it might have been through, like, an agam, through, like, a pasture of sorts. It'd almost be like the equivalent of, you know, somebody's in Murashah for the summer, and they find out that a girl from their same neighborhood also is driving from Murashah back to Woodmere, and they said, oh, you're going to Woodmere, I'm going to Woodmere, it's 4 hours, you know, why don't we drive down together, right? And Abaye heard that story. And immediately Abaye's thought process was that they're going to be involved in some type of sexually inappropriate behavior. So he said, you know, I'll follow them, I'll see what's happening, maybe I'll try to, you know, prevent the behavior. Abaye already had in his mind that there was something untoward that was sort of transpiring, that was taking place. So he follows them along the way. And at the end, the man turns to the woman turns to the man and says, you know what, it was so pleasant traveling these few hours together, you know, thanks for traveling with me, thanks for driving me, thanks for whatever, you know, say some shalom, they went on their own way. And Abaye realized that he had totally misinterpreted, totally misunderstood, that this was just a benign interaction between a man and a woman, but he framed it in some way by something sexual, something inappropriate. There was a Zaken who was there that the Mephorishim, the commentaries assume was Eliyahu HaNavi. And he said, like, in that interaction, based on what ended up coming out, was that Abaye realized that Kol HaGadol, right, Mechavero Yisro Gadol Himendo, that Abaye perhaps had a greater Yetzahara because of his stature. He had real sort of almost like shame about it. He was felt like very almost defeated when he saw that he misinterpreted what was happening. Anybody have, like, a question about that Gemara of Abaye following this couple and then realizing that he misunderstood it? He felt horrible about it. He was assuaged by Eliyahu HaNavi. That is because of his greatness. So, you know, I thought that perhaps that what Chazal is doing, in a way, is recognizing for everyone, anybody who learns Gemara, anybody who is trying to embrace Jewish values, of how much shame there must be around these areas. Areas of sexuality, areas of Yetzihara, areas of compulsion. And by sort of speaking about it openly, and by even talking about Abaye and his own recognition of maybe his own, if you want to call it, either challenges or perspectives, it's almost like allowing us, like, to breathe a little bit easier and to not always feel like, what's wrong with me? You know, why do I have these compulsive thoughts? It's like almost like allowing a person to remove some of that shame bind around behavior. So I want to just mention, I want to give Rebbe plenty of time to speak. I want to mention that this topic of addiction can be framed, instead of just a discussion about addiction, which is significant, but it may not apply to everybody in this room, as really a question about, like, a lack of freedom. And the whole narrative, the whole discussion of Bnei Yisrael going free and leaving Mitzrayim, crossing Yam Suf, is like it's a narrative of achieving Chayrus. And maybe the reflection of how difficult Chayrus is to achieve. Now, I want to ask you a question, and this is not a trick question. When Bnei Yisrael went free, and they left Mitzrayim, and they stood at Yam Suf, and they crossed Yam Suf, would you say they were totally free in that moment? Were they total Bnei Chorin as they sort of crossed and thought about crossing and got to the other side? Would you sort of describe the status of Bnei Yisrael as being Bnei Chorin or not? Anybody? Yeah?
I would say not. See, there's obviously, you know, statements they make later of wanting to go back and let's go back.
Sure.
They seem to be, like, I guess mentally still in Mitzrayim.
Right, right. So what you're picking up on is a very famous Ibn Ezra, probably one of the most two or three most famous Ibn Ezra's in all the Torah, that the Ibn Ezra asked, so why would they be complaining before they went through Yam Suf of the Mitzrayim coming? Why don't you just sort of turn around and just like fight against the Mitzrayim, right? Here it is, they just witnessed the 10 plagues and they witnessed all that, they witnessed God's revelation, so turn around and fight. So everyone know what Ibn Ezra said? He said that once you're a person, that you're an Eved, once like you're a slave, it's very difficult to shun, and it's very difficult to remove that personality of Avdus and the fight against your master. Once you're a slave already, you're almost stuck in that. And so much of Sefer Bamidbar, and so Sfas Emes mentions this on a number of occasions, is a reflection of Bnei Israel not really being totally free. They still viewed themselves as being an Eved. When we speak about some of the laws of Karban Pesach, the Sefer Chinuch says that this was done so a person can remove from themselves like the mantle, the yoke of Avdus. That I feel limited. I don't feel totally free. I don't feel in control of my destiny. I don't feel like I have total choice or control over my choices. That was even Bnei Yisrael even after going free. And when I sit and I reflect in my own life or in other people's lives about that lack of freedom, I want to maybe highlight three different areas just to be mindful of, and then we'll turn the conversation over to Neuberger, and then certainly feel free to circle back to this either today or in the future. What are areas where we don't have full control over ourselves? Where we may look like we're free, and we're moving our arms, and I can choose what class I want to take, and who I want to marry, and where I want to live, and what type of, you know, deli wrap I want to get. Like, I'm a free person, but what are the areas where we're not really feeling completely free? So one area, and I find this personally painful for myself, is sometimes in the areas of our midos. And I just want to say on a personal level, I'm, I guess, the second oldest person here, if I'm not mistaken, right? Right? Okay. And, you know, children who
went through... You got your license?
What's that? You have a license. So, children who went through many different stages and different challenges. And how often I look back on my reactions to my kids and said, well, this was just born out of impulse, or it was just born out of anger, where there was some internal template of such and such a thing happened, and I just reacted, right? I just impulsively reacted from some place of anger. Maybe I felt the lack of kavod, maybe I felt I wasn't being spoken to properly, maybe I felt I wanted my kids to act in a certain type of way and they weren't doing it. So you just react, you know, huffing and puffing up the stairs and knocking on the door, right? Driving on the Palisades, and there's somebody driving in front of me going much too slow, and this person there, and I'm thinking, okay, I'm gonna honk on the horn and they're gonna, and then that's my natural reaction to a situation. Maybe there's natural reaction situations born out of feelings of insecurity or gaiva or needing kavod or jealousy or the way perhaps that's built into a template of how husbands speak to wives and wives speak to husbands. Where just sort of naturally there is a reaction in the world of midos. And therefore when the Baal HaMachshava and especially when the Gra speaks about the idea of shviras hamidos, breaking midos, and that's a person's entire life, it's because there is a realization that so much of what we do is so built into us. And therefore, just naturally, there's going to be a certain reaction, unless we spend our whole lives working on that, to break that, to recreate ourselves, to rechannel certain pathways in our brain. And most people go through their lives without real freedom of how they want to react to situations. That's a fundamental lack of chayrus. number one. Again, and we can speak for days and days and weeks exactly about this topic. The second piece is the fact that for many people, including many people in this room, there's a lack of freedom based around maybe personal traumas in their past. And therefore, because things have happened to me in my life, and perhaps because my parents showed up for me in a certain type of way, maybe because my mother was X and my father was Y, and maybe there was a certain amount of either bullying or abuse or abandonment or lack of needs met in my life, even if it's not always verbalized, even if it's not always stated, a person sometimes feels just almost like stuck in that. Stuck in my sense of myself that I don't measure up. Stuck in feelings of inadequacy, perhaps of self-hatred, of not being competent, of feeling like a loser. Things were became almost defined in my own life and my own childhood of certain self-perceptions and codependency and certain behaviors and attachment patterns, etc. And the person feels like I'm stuck in that. I'm stuck being a certain type of person. And often those patterns ruin a person's life. Leads to depression, leads to addiction, leads to relational issues, leads to failed marriages, because I'm stuck being a certain type of person based on my pathology, based on my childhood. And for a person to be able to say, you know what, I can become free of that. I can do the work on myself, I can go through therapy, I can get whatever help that I need to sort of leave behind patterns of codependency and unhealthy attachment and unhealthy relation patterns and unhealthy feelings of self. Like, I can become free of that, but to first realize maybe how often enslaved we are to so much of what happened because of our past. And lastly, and thirdly, is the question about addiction or compulsive behavior. Now, addiction, as many people know in this room, because there are people in this room who are in 12-step programs, what defines a person as actually being an addict or not addict is complicated. And it's defined differently. Am I somebody who just maybe enjoys certain types of behavior and I feel bad about it, but I have control about it? Or am I a full-blown addict? And if I'm a full-blown addict, or if I shouldn't say even a full-blown addict, if I am an addict, davening for an hour in Yom Kippur and crying about it and taking upon myself various kabbalos, you know, that's not going to be effective. Once a person already has an addictive nature and so much of that is built into the biology of a person and their brains, and there's such a thing called an addict brain, which doesn't really often allow for a person in a way to turn away from compulsive behavior, just sort of davening about it to making a kabbalah, you know, a commitment about it, that's not going to be enough. A person who's an addict needs help, right? And that help usually comes in the form of, first and foremost, 12-step programs, which are absolutely critical. Also, the right therapist trained in that as well. That's like a person who's an addict. But many people, and I would say most people in YU, and most people in the world, deal with compulsive behavior. Whether it's internet addiction, online gambling addiction, or internet, like, you know, hours and hours of watching Netflix or being on the internet, gambling, online gaming, pornography. Right? It's like compulsive behavior that has like a foothold in my life. And that feeling of pain of not having full control over my life. Of feeling like my self-vision, my image for myself is over here, and I want to be this type of person. And my values and my identity are over here, but my behaviors is somewhere else. And that pain of that sort of lack of freedom in a way. So those are the three lack of freedoms I want to mention. Midos, the way that we view ourselves, being able to sort of heal from childhood issues in our life, compulsive behavior. And each one of these leads to books and books and books about dealing with it. But the first point is, And the first two critical points is A, the realization of that lack of freedom, being able to be honest with myself and say, I'm not totally free in some of these areas. And B, the bravery, and it is bravery, of coming forward and saying, I need help. I need help in changing my midos. I need help in dealing with traumas in my life. I need help in compulsive behavior. Ein odem matirs atzmo beis hasurim. A person cannot always release themselves from something that they feel in bondage towards. And to have the bravery of that, and also to have the recognition, and I'll conclude with this, and I speak on behalf of the four people in front of you, but anybody, any Rav, any Rebbe, any Mashkiach, any therapist, the realization that when somebody comes to me to talk about these issues, and I will speak on behalf of Rebbe as well, it only adds to the great feeling of love and compassion and respect that we have for people dealing with this. There's no feelings of diminishment. How could Yosef Schwartz be doing the opposite? This is a beautiful human being who's struggling with their humanity, who's really, in essence, trying to be close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Let's sit down. Let's work together. Let's talk. And to realize that that's the only response you're going to get from the people in your life if you come forward to talk about some of these issues that are very, very natural issues. So again, the lack of freedom, three areas they express themselves in, acknowledging and recognizing the lack of freedom, and also really developing the bravery of stepping forward to have those conversations about the lack of freedom. Those are just sort of a few framing thoughts that I had on the topic.
Thank you.
We got a picture, too, for the...
The picture didn't happen.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Thank you very much for your gosh tag and your candidates for arranging the blast for convening. Of course, the... It goes back maybe 3 or 4 years. I was driving into yeshiva. I was driving in late, and a Talmud called me on the phone, and he said he's in class right now, and I am a speakerphone with the class. And he said that he was giving a class on addiction, and one of the Talmidim said, Rebbe, what's the difference between being addicted to a substance or being addicted to coffee? So he said, it's a good question. So I'm going to call my Rebbe, who's addicted to coffee. So he said, Rebbe, you're on the line right now with the Talmidim. He's lying.
We have all these cups right there.
Just the two coffee cups, just to prove the point.
So I said, the question's a good question. But I don't know of any situation where a person said, I made a terrible decision because I was drinking coffee. I don't know if he said, my marriage was destroyed because I drank too much coffee. So, Lania's Daiti, it's important, just as in every area of mental health, whether it's depression, anxiety, it's important to be able to draw lines as to what is an addiction that maybe should be encouraged, less of a coffee, maybe giving stock of philanthropy, right? Learning. What is, what's really, what we call it a habit, we don't call it an addiction, it's a very, very, what is an addiction where a baby can be helpful? What is an addiction where you need to have professional counseling, and what's the level of addiction when a person needs a full 12-step program, really is looking at the years and years of hard work, very hard work. But as Rabbi Glass said, very, very, the work that gives more covet to a person and to his creator. So, Lania's Daiti, the way I'm trying to deal with it, trying to understand it myself, there are within... We are all aware of very, very positive addictions. Positive, we call them great habits, right? The Rambam says, better to give tzedakah more and more frequently, even if you give less each time, than to give a lot of money a few times, because you'll be margil yourself. Now, I would assume, I would assume it's the same dopamine reaction. So the body is responding in the same way. the body is having a positive reaction, a positive reinforcement. And the Rambam says, look, if you can get a, the Gemara says, if you get a positive reaction from giving tzedakah, well, you're going to become a more giving person. We're making use of the same neural pathway. When the Rambam writes that when a child is young, you give him candy for learning. When he gets a little bit older, you give him gifts, and you give him money for learning. And then, hopefully, at some point, he loves learning. It doesn't mean that he's a lifelong Kol member, but he, at some point, he loves learning itself. And that is considered to be a healthy way of a person maturing to create good habits. A person who, so often, this is more the generation before me, people became minyan goers because they had to say Kaddish. They had never gone to a minyan before in their lives. They went to minyan on Shabbos, Sunday morning, maybe, but they had to say Kaddish. So when I was a kid growing up, most of the regular guys going to minyan became minyan goers because they'd said Kaddish. There were guys who, after 12 months, they were looking forward, after 11 months, to going back to the schedule. But most of them, what happened? They had such a positive reaction to having a schedule that begins with going to minyan, hanging around with the chevra afterward, right? Maybe it was the kiddush with the chavs after. Maybe I don't know, but I think it was this positive, good habit which just reinforced itself, and it became a lifelong positive habit. How do we often discuss this in the context of the Ramban that talks about the midas hachesed, first being a child and then being a sibling and then being a parent? How does a child become a bal chesed? Right, the first time you're raising children and you say, I think you should be Menachem Ovel, this person. The child says, Menachem Ovel? But what am I going to say? What am I going to sit there? It's not going to owe me a value to anybody. The kid comes, right? I exchange words with them just once or twice, right? It's going to be so awkward, right? That's a, awkward is like a terrible thing. So, and then there's the first time when, when you're able to coax your child to come along. And the first time the child here is the almost saying, it was meaningful to me that you came. It meant so much to me that you as a kid knew who my father was. And that good feeling, that spark of a good feeling is what is the beginning of a life of a person being Menachem Ovel, being Malkei Cholam, but knowing that they can do something meaningful to somebody else, even though it doesn't make sense to me. And that is how, that's like the creation of a Baal Chesed. But it begins with that one positive, and maybe even a dopamine reaction. But you learn how to build on that. On the other hand, when a habit that we have are developing is self-destructive, so that's called an addiction, right? That and it could be the sieve, it could be the simon. I don't know. I'm not sure if to discuss it. Whether that is the fact that I could get involved in a self-destructive habit, so that means that I've now, as Reb Lasher is saying, I'm a shubit to something. I'm not. If there's it's fascinating because it is so contemporary. A Gemara in Pesachim Daf Kuf Yud Gimel. The Gemara says that Rav Chiya told his son not to take the medication. Be careful in taking medication. Why should you be careful in taking medication? Because he says that you're going to lotish de sama. So the Rashi says leitilmad lishtos samim. Don't make it into a habit to take medication. Because it'll become an ongoing, regular requirement. And then something inside of you is going to want this. It's going to become a very, very expensive habit. So we know the Rashbam is a different lashon. The Rashbam says that one of the Mefarshim says it because out of every, they're all side effects. But the point that we're making is that you see already Bismana Gemara and Bismana Rishon, the idea of getting drawn into something because there's a positive feedback, and then it's going to create something that you're not able to break away from. Right? We call that the Ben Sarah Mara. mean, Sarah Murr is involved in something that is unusually is excessive, but the Gemara says this is going to create a situation where a person is melastimus abrius. A person is going to end up robbing people, maybe killing people. And the so the instruction that Chazal and the Torah gives us is that Kadosh Baruch Hu gave us this koyach and the bria, and we can harness that koyach and the bria to become a guy who goes to binyan, a guy who's a tzuras hayoyim, and a guy who's kovei yitim Torah. If you read the way the Chavetz Chaim describes kviyas yitim, it is, it's almost be addicted. You don't break the kviyas yitim, and the so it's a koyach and the bria. But that koyach and the bria can then be over-exercised in something which we know is self-destructive. And the halacha is, that's the by the Bensura Mara, the sugya Bensura Mara is how much is Hashema Osid, and how much is the lab right now of Zol Vesoyve. So apparently, there's a lab right now of getting involved in something which I know has a history of engaging a person to the extent that they will lose their control, and they'll be mishubit, something destructive. The first thing the person has to recognize in this area of addiction is that it is destructive. That is a dover bar reposhet. Now, when a person becomes rachmanas lan a shikir, I can tell you, Blas can tell you, Basha Varikana can all tell you, it destroys lives. It destroys marriages. It destroys families. A child has a very hard time having respect for a parent who's a shikir. So a parent who's a shikir, they've destroyed the way that the child will mature properly, the way the child will learn, not just to mature, to become a mensch. They've destroyed probably the most important relationship that a person can have. And marriages, for sure. There's a certain point in time where a spouse will cover, but the suffering that a spouse has when, so first you have to realize the dover portion that can, that no one should dissuade you otherwise. Pornography, besides being an Eastern Mukhlet in itself, but again, when I say that, I'm saying that fully recognizing that it is a makkah that is sweeping across the Olam. The only yeshiva, and something has to be, that we have to figure it out, but we have to recognize, number one, besides it being self-destructive and destroys one's ruchnius, and even after one purges it, it's very hard for that, for the ill that it creates in the neshama to ever be removed, for every person to ever be the same clay kibul of kedusha. And once a person has been exposed to pornography, to be able to achieve in learning in ruchnius, that's what Chazal referred to as Timtum and Neshama. But people don't realize it destroys marriages. A woman feels terribly degraded, right? And the avoda that we want to try to save the marriage, the avoda that we have to do with one's wife to explain the Yetzer Hara of the husband is an avoda kosha admoy. One has to realize gambling, besides destroying a person's parnasa and destroying a person's self-respect, it destroys the families. Families get pulled apart. There's so much that a woman can take, that a wife can take, that a spouse can take, when the spouse is vacant. So one has to understand that these are things, devar ha-mashchisa. And we haven't seen it yet, but there's no reason why we shouldn't assume that a technology addiction could be easily destroyed. I haven't seen it yet. But there's no reason why we shouldn't assume that at some point, if a person is vacant, they're not home. Right? That means they're not there for the children, not there for themselves, for their spouse. So that's number one. You have to realize that there's certain things that are self-destructive, and that has to be the beginning point. Like, I have to make a tikkun over here, because I'm going to have a very, very disappointing life later on, very disappointing marriage later on. Right? I'm going to be a clay kibble that's going to be very, very limited. And then one has to have a clear perception of that, understanding that it is a neural pathway that Baruch Hu put into the Bria, and that the Kodesh Baruch Hu put in the Bria, they say, B'shem Rav Nachman, and B'shem L'Kakel, B'shem L'Takeh, right? The Kodesh Baruch Hu would not have put, given us a Kayach that we cannot fix up. So, and that we cannot, and that we cannot harness for the good. So that's some of that. Then, the other thing we have to appreciate is that all of the self-destructive behavior blurs one's ability to be a tzelem elokim. It blurs the ability to make decisions. It blurs the ability to have a bechira chavshus. That's what the blast was referring to. It makes one meshubit. So if one's meshubit to one's yetzirah tov to do chesed miskavaldik. But if one is meshubit to kas, if one's meshubit to technology. So these are things that we have to chacham eina b'roshay, that I'm not going to be, I'm going to be making bad decisions later on. I'm going to be making terrible decisions of staying up late at night when I know that the next day I have important things and I'm not going to be attentive. I'm not going to be a good employee tomorrow. I'm not going to be a good rebbe tomorrow. So it has to have that clarity when one has moments of clarity, but when one gets hooked on any of these things, one is blurring one's ability. And then we have to look at it in the Kedoshim Tiyu context, that it's, as the Ramban said, Novel Gershus HaTorah. What's Novel Gershus HaTorah? Novel Gershus HaTorah is one drink is not a problem. Two drinks is not a problem. It's when it leads to other things, when a person realizes. This is if a person, all of us, can appreciate if we are misboining ourselves, that we're self-reflective, we can be misboining when we're on the verge heading in a bad direction. Right? The moment we appreciate the hana of having a drink or two, so then we are at the cusp of heading into a terribly bad behavior pattern. Right? And it's so clear. Because it's so clear that whiskey is not an enjoyable drink. It's so clear that it's all associative, because the first time a person drinks, it's the terrible stuff. And if a person would be able to disassociate the good feel it gives from the actual burning taste that goes down one's throat when it has it, it's ridiculous, right? It's totally associative. It's totally associative with either with the chevra that one holds, or with the picture one has in one's mind, or with the good feel that one has. So when one realizes that one's engaged in something which is only good by association, so then one has to say, this is not could not be a good thing. And that's when one has to be able to say, okay, I can. Right? There was, and when I was growing up, there was something that was very well received. People distance themselves from it, and now some studies are coming back to it. It was believed in the Orthodox community we didn't have alcoholism as a problem because we came to drinking in a positive context. Kiddush, or Bokosos. And then, probably in the 90s, so the people reversed. They said, no, it could be that even the Kiddush, the mitzvah of Kiddush, even our bakosos, maybe that does, we get a person on a, I don't know. Now the studies are coming back to ascertain that the old theory was a correct theory. So again, Tzarechian. Apparently what happened was that unfortunately alcoholism became something in the Orthodox community. When I was growing up, we still heard a goy is a shikr. And the concept of a person being a drunk, that was, you were out of the, out of Jewish culture. You weren't part of Jewish culture if you were a shikr. A goy is a shikr, right? That was the picture. That was drilled into us. We wouldn't have even dreamt because something just foreign to being a Jew. That changed, unfortunately, right? I remember as wine and scotch became something that people spoke about. When I was growing up, people would make fun of the people that would hold the bottle and speak about the godless of the bottle, the smoky taste and the aftertaste and the smoothness. So they'd make fun. It was like it's on us. Then stop being dishonest. People started really talking about this. That you would go to a Shalom Zachar, and people would actually, people would actually be talking seriously about the godless of this, how old it's been, and how long it's been, and how much you paid. And then you go into the store, and you see that the bottles that you want to buy are at the back of the store, that they're embarrassed to sell. And the front of the store, is people are paying hundreds of dollars. So that was a change in the Jewish community. And so that's when the thinking changed, that maybe even the positive context. But now it's coming back, and we have Turkish Baruch Hu asks things from us, and they have to be good. Chazal asks things from us. A person has the Arba Koisos, so that means if a person has a propensity for this. But if a person doesn't have the propensity for addictions, so then it means I'm going to get a positive charge now, but my positive charge is going to be because I'm doing a mitzvah, because it's Leil Seder, because it's only Arba Koisos, because it's Mitzalti. It's not going to be, I'm not going to associate with the good feel. The emphasis is that growing up, none of us enjoyed the avocados because we only had the very thick, heavy wine, and we all get sick, they'll say it. We all just push through it. Now, some people actually, I still find this still very burdensome to have all this during avocados. But Gemara says that they would have avocados, there was one in Baruch who would have a headache till Shavuos. So that's a change. But again, a yotze mikol zeh, I think that there's a kayach in the Bria that when harnessed properly, we build elegant lives. When that kayach in the Bria is misused, so then that's when you need somebody to figure out, am I misusing to the point where with a good discussion from my Rebbe, I could work this out. Well, I need a Rebbe and the count and the therapist. I once had a situation where a person was had been addicted to pornography, and the therapist said, "Tell your Rav and daven in the minyan he davens," and that saved his marriage. Obviously, he worked through it. But he held himself responsible. He had to see me every day. He would see me in the morning every day. We didn't discuss it. But that created a certain, who am I? Am I the guy who goes to me to the Rav every day, or the guy that can't show up in shul because the Rav knows what I'm doing? And then there is the Kayach HaBriyah, which has been so abused. The Kodesh Baruch Hu says the Tikkun requires a huge Avodah. It's a huge Avodah. That's why at your ages it's important to see so clearly that if one's vacant, so then that can destroy a life. When it's chizuk, when it's therapy, when it's counseling, one has to go for it. Let me just add something that I learned both from Zvi Schweinreb and from Dr. Fox. Both have premier combinations of great Talmidei Chachamim and great therapist, that they understand that the greater concern in the Jewish community that we have right now for addictions is because of so much of our asocial behavior. Now they understand that addictions come heavily because they're filling some kind of a void. I'm missing something in my life, and I fill that gaping void by this continuous charge of positivity. And they both understand that what's missing is healthy relationships. Adkan Divya Rab. Divya Talmudar, that my positive reinforcement in life, my way of building an elegant life of me based on mitzvahs, is by positive reactions from my parents and from my rebbeim and from my friends, right? So my children, and when I don't get that positive reaction from relationships because I'm heavily on social media, I don't have real relationships on social media, right? So when that becomes my way of relating to other people, so then I'm missing a huge aspect of life when it gets positive reinforcements from having a chevrusa. from having relationships. So that's what we have to think about very, very carefully. Because if they both struck upon something which would explain what we're looking at, then we know how to make the tikkun. So Rabbi Weinreb had a fascinating heart. He said, this, the one comment in Shas that we know of about not getting addicted to Samim is not a halacha, it's the advice of a father to a son. And he said, maybe that's the key, that that the relationship was there. And he said, you don't need Samim, because your life is full of having a father of Abba. It's an interesting heart.
If I can, I just want to maybe mention something just for 45 seconds. You know, Rebbe spoke before about a person has to realize what they're doing to their neshama and their connection to a Kadosh Baruch Hu, all of which is true. I just want to mention maybe as like when I'm also a therapist for addictions and also obviously my role here, of the certain like sensitive duality that comes with that type of self-speak. And Rebbe said this also, I just want to reiterate it. On the one hand, we should be almost like tough with ourselves. If a person wants to get help, a person needs help, like, I can't do this. Like, I'm destroying myself. I'm destroying my marriage, or my future marriage. I'm destroying my neshama. You know, a person needs to be able to sort of like hold themselves to the fire. And really, with the sort of the other hand at the same time, like a real sense of compassion as well. Like, nobody wants to be sinking into this hole. This isn't because anybody is bad or doesn't care about Kadosh Baruch Hu. Like, there's a need for enormous self-compassion as well. And both within ourselves, and I'm sure professionally as well, both of you, have had to sort of do both. Like, A, yeah, like, you know, hold the line as far as responsibility, to really be very clear about that. On the other hand, to really have that real self-compassion as well. And both are really critical if a person wants to sort of be able to move their life forward. Okay, I know it's one already. Do we have time for a few questions? Okay.
Yeah, I mean, we don't want to keep anyone, but maybe we'll try in the brevity of time, we'll try to take a few. Maybe we can start with one that was written in, and then we'll
open just one second, we're going to wait for, yeah.
I don't know how you guys sit in these things. I'm not sure. how they sit in these chairs. So, didn't have them when I was here, and I don't know. It's like, from the anonymous questions that came in, so it says, how can addictions to things that are sins in the Torah be considered an illness? He says, for example, pornography, gambling, sex. I'm assuming that anything that the Torah says not to do is in our power not to do. So the question is, he says, how can we consider it an illness if it's if the Torah says not to do it? So what is it? You know, it's like saying, oh, well, you know, don't get a cold. Well, which is a funny to the Gemara that everything is bidei shemayim except for atzinu pachim. But if it's an illness, so then is it a choice? And if it's a choice, is it an illness?
The Rambam says that when it comes to personality dispositions, so they're some of us who have an aversion to a natural aversion to things that are bad. Some of us have a natural propensity to good or bad, and we have a different level of pursuit when it comes to that. So a person who has an aversion to drinking, either natural or that it's nurtured into them, so they will have it, then their bechira will not be tested in that particular area as much as a person doesn't have the natural or nurtured aversion. On the other hand, a person has a certain propensity to becoming addicted, the dopamine reactions that are quicker and faster and more furious, so they have a much higher, then their bechira becomes much more tested then. So, l'chora is something in that area. It's true that we look at addiction as an illness, and that's a very important part of, as Rabbi Blass is saying, self-compassion. It's a very important part of maintaining one's family to try to struggle through something. And that is the way that we can have that we're not miyayish after years of being addicted, that there is efshar l'takei, that's true. And there may be a certain point where I don't have bechira anymore. That's also true. But there is a point in time, and for different people, it's a different bechira. I think it goes back to Dessler's Malach and Likudus of Bechira. That address.
Well, and even once, obviously, this, if you've not learned Dessler's Kudus Bechira, someone showed this discussion goes to that. A person might have lost Bechira, and if we assume that addiction is an illness, which most people do at this point, so if left on one's own devices, a person is going to act out again, right? A person just says, well, I don't want to watch pornography. But if you're already like at a certain place in your life, you can't just say, I don't want to watch pornography, I don't want to take this drug, I don't want to... You're going to do it. Right? You've done it, it's built into your template, it's built into your behavior, you have very little Bechira about it at that point. You do have Bechira of getting help, right? You do have Bechira of maybe going to, not that anybody needs this here, but an inpatient facility. You have Bechira of going to therapy, Bechira of going to a 12-step program, right? So at a certain point, we don't have control over behavior anymore, but we do have control of getting the help to then address the behavior, and therefore a person always has some, you know, element of Bechira for something, you know, for some piece of that process.
So dovetailing into that question of Bechira, so the first anonymous question that we got also fits in as well, in a more brass tacks halacha l'maisa setting. If an addict feels like he's getting those indications he's going to slide back, and he can either at this moment, you know, he says the questioner says use the tools, but maybe what we can say it's either go to minyan right now or go to a 12-step meeting. Right, if I go to 12-step meeting, I'll be able to stave this off. And otherwise, there's going to be a minion. Like Rebbe said, there's going to be Kiddush after the minion, and that's where I'm going to be.
This whole thing is avoided if you move to Muncie and then you go to Shiners.
Absolutely, or in Brooklyn, you know.
Either this or go to a minion. That's never, you know.
They have a meeting factory as well as a minion factory.
Next question.
But I don't want to jump in ahead of Rebbe because this is a halakhic issue. But you know what many people assume is that issues of addiction are issues of Hatzalas Nefashos, right? If I think that if I don't go to a meeting now, I'm going to fall back to behavior, and once I fall back into certain behavior, that can lead to behavior that can really destroy my life. You know, even when it comes to, let's say, the issue of sexual addiction, where it's not like drug addiction or alcohol addiction where you can overdose, these issues are Hatzalas Nefashos. People take their own lives, people are suicidal, people destroy their neshamas, people destroy their marriages. And a person, let's say, has worked hard to achieve sobriety, and then taking that first drink is going to set them back into a pattern of behavior, like that should be viewed as the most important thing I can do, whether even if it's on Shabbos, which is what Rabbi told people, make phone calls on Shabbos if they need, would be to make a phone call and get to a meeting, right? Because that's really dina nefashos. If a person has to daven by themselves, okay, you know. But to really sort of view these areas... And that's what Ray Newberger said before, like, all of you at age 20, 21, 22, 23, whatever struggles you might be having with behaviors, typically it's in enough of a stage of, like, a younger stage. You're not 50 years old or 60 years old where you still have sort of a certain amount of control to not let it become something which is so intensified that these sort of fall into the areas of Dina Nefashos. But these are very, very serious areas. And the poskim who deal with these areas, because when they realize that, and they recognize that, and they're, you know, very, very serious about that.
Mm-hmm.
Good. Yeah. Moshe, you want to say something? And also, I know people have to go, so if you want to, anybody needs to go, please go.
Maybe one quick question, one or two,
and then we do have to bench also. So if we want to bench,
okay. So Moshe, maybe one question, then we'll.
I have one question.
Yeah.
First of all, really, thank you so much for making this happen. It was really, really insightful. It's helped me a lot. I wanted to clarify the difference between what Rebbe mentioned, or Blas mentioned, the addictive brain, and what Rebbe mentioned about, like, habitual behavior that kind of just builds up. How does one identify if he has that addictive brain, and if he does, what would be steps to kind of work with that?
And Rebbe also mentioned, when Rebbe spoke about neuropathways, we're talking about sort of the same thing. And you can actually, by the way, just as a side note, take a look at the brain of somebody who's an addict. It is a different brain. Now, that can be based on being an addict, it can be based on childhood trauma, it can be based on that maybe your mother was an addict also, but it's literally a different, the neuropathways are actually different as far as the capacity of controlling impulse, and all of those things. This is not just sort of some philosophical discussion. It's an actual... But I guess your question, Moshe, was difference between addicted behavior, the neuropathics grade that, and just like stam good habits? Is that what...
Or even mean? If I didn't build up addictive behavior yet, how does one identify if he has that addictive brain and, to be careful in the future and, take steps to avoid it?
So I would just say, and these... Emotion, you have to be super self-aware, as many people here as well. People usually at a certain point in life, you know about yourself whether you have an addictive nature or not, right? You can have kids who go to an ice cream store and they say, you know what, I'll take one scoop of ice cream. Mom, do you want to have some sprinkles? And again, that's it. And then I'll be sort of happy with my scoop of ice cream. And then you have the kid who's downstairs, rummaging through the freezer because once already the desire for sugar has been triggered, they're now like off to the races, right? There are certain addictive natures in a person, and that person is a little bit more vulnerable towards big-time addictive behaviors down the road. And usually parents come to identify that in children, extreme natures of personality, extreme emotions, extreme sort of... it's to some degree, it's like built into the nature of someone who's going to be more susceptible towards that behavior or not.
Does that make sense? Yeah. Seeing that from a young age.
Which was exactly sort of what that Mishnah meant in Sanhedrin in a way of, sort of Sanhedrin Parshas Drachim. It's sort of that. It's like understanding that certain things that are so built into a person's nature that almost to some degree that person is stripped of a hero once a person is so sort of indoctrinated with a certain nature in some way.
In the parsha ben Sarah Mara, there's a lubdish piece. Might even be the last of Chaim and the Sefer, if I remember correctly, that getting malchus is part of the determining that the person is a ben Sarah Mara. That is, if he's willing to get malchus, then that shows that he is on the path of being a ben Sarah Mara. So the malchus is not an onesh, but it's a litmus test almost. So Lanias Daiti, part again, I'm a total amateur in this area, but if a person looks at his bone and says, I'm doing something which is not pleasant, gambling, that means that I'm willing, when a person gambles, there are different things going on among different surges of risk-taking, of being nerve-wracking, nail-biting. that's not a pleasant feeling. Right. So why am I doing this unpleasant feeling? Because there's a surge at the end if I'm successful, right? And if I'm not successful, then I'm going to be driven to the next table, the next gamble, right? So you was blaming this, and this really was an unpleasant experience, but I'm still doing it. So that is an indication that one is at the cusp of something that's not good. But the fact that you can have that insight means that you can harness it in a positive way. That'd be my...
And just to add to what Rabbi said, we'll leave it for this, every addictive behavior started off serving a role and being pleasant. A person got drunk the first X amount of times, it made them more comfortable, it allowed them to talk to girls, that's what people usually said, it made them more comfortable in their skin. The addict is someone that even after it stops having a positive benefit and it's not pleasant anymore, continues that behavior well beyond the point where it's actually playing like a positive, nice, helpful role in that person's life. And that's sort of when you know you're in trouble. I'm doing things that it's hurting my body, I feel shame, I'm hiding from my whatever, I'm still doing it. That should be a red flag to everybody that, you know what, I need help in some capacity.
Okay, guys, thank you so
much.
Thanks
so much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Ravain. Thank you so much for joining us. We hope to continue the series into the fall when we start up back again in the LL/Stav's Fall's Mind.
Thank you, Rabbi Blass. Thank you, Neuberger. Kosher Pesach.
Thank you for.